Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your website, go to our blog at TaylorMade101.com. That's T-A-I. LORMADE101.com for details. I would like to say hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. Today's topics include President Obama ends the war in Iraq, Herman Cain's new 909 plan, and of course we have to talk about Brian Gumbo and his remarks about the commissioner. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, check in at Foursquare or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll also be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open, so there's many ways for you to join the conversation. So, but first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, of course, I talked about President Obama's comments that he made about bringing our troops home. And so there was a report by CNN said that President Barack Obama on Friday announced that virtually all U.S. troops will come home from Iraq by the end of the year, at which point he can declare an end to America's long and costly war in that Middle Eastern nation. Now, he said that after nearly 9 years, America's war in Iraq will be over. The coming months will be a season of homecomings. Our troops in Iraq will definitely be home for the holidays. Now, the 39,000 troops in Iraq, CNN reports, about 150 of them, a negligible force, will remain in to assist in arms sales, a U.S. official told CNN. Now, the rest will be out of Iraq by December 31st. Now, the president said he was making good on his 2008 campaign pledge. What do you think? Is the president keeping his promise? More importantly, what will happen once the troops come home? How would it affect our economy? Will the unemployment rate take a dip or would it increase? Of course, I would love to get your comment on this. Also in the news, I want to talk about something that Brian Gumbel mentioned. And in fact, he said that he called David Stern a plantation overseer. Now, NewsOne is reporting that with 2 weeks of the NBA season already canceled, many columnists and sports commentators have launched their verbal assaults toward the players, owners, and both parties in some instances at the same time. Now, the latest respected commentator to throw in his two cents is Brian Gumbel, who recently called NBA Commissioner David Stern a plantation overseer. Now, I wonder if you heard the comments, even if you didn't hear the comments, I'm going to play for you what News One captured and the audio of this particular statement that Brian Gumbel mentioned. So I want to get from the listening audience out there, did you think he went too far? Are his comments synonymous with the comments that were made a couple of weeks ago with the guy that was talking about the president, calling him Hitler? Is it okay to tolerate Brian Gumbel's comments as opposed to the singer that talked about the president? Is it going too far? Is it not? I would love to kind of get some insight from you. What do you think about this? You know, on the other hand, is Brian Gumbel was he kind of in the right lane when he talked about this? Is it true, perhaps? So, also in the news, Herman Cain again. Now, you know, we've been talking about Herman Cain for the last 4 or 5 weeks. Now, of course, he clearly won a debate this last time. But because he's the Republican front runner, he's getting a lot more attention, I should say. I'm not going to say attacks. I don't think they're attacks. I mean, quite naturally, when you're a front runner, people are going to be coming gunning for you. You know, after clearly winning the debate this last time, you know, I can see why so many people are gunning for him, because he's clearly the leading GOP candidate right now. Now, of course, he's been on a couple of talk shows over the last couple of weeks, and people have been asking a lot about his 999 plan. And so what he did most recently, Herman Cain came out and he tweaked the 999 plan to help lower-income Americans, he says, and himself, quite frankly. Now, out of the Washington Post, they say that businessman Herman Cain, who has surged to the top of the polls with an innovative tax plan and strong speeches, has been accused of some GOP strategists and the press of operating like a vanity candidate, interested in more in gaining attention than the Republican presidential nomination, but looking to rebuke criticism that his 999 tax plan would raise taxes on poor and middle-income Americans. Cain on Friday delivered a speech that sounded very much like traditional politician. The former Godfather's Pizza executive offered new details on his tax plan that he says would reduce taxes both for people who are poor and businesses that invest in low-income areas like Detroit. Now, he strongly defended his own candidacy and credentials. Of course, in the media has been, treating him like a second-tier candidate up until recently, because he's getting so much voters' confidence, because they're obviously, you know, being head in the polls would do that. He gave a strong debate performance this last time. And so now, much of the commentators are now trying to take him a little more seriously, and they're starting to uncover the details of his 999 plan. And so because of that, you know, it's really getting an opportunity for him to really justify and explain his plan. And so we're going to do something that other stations don't do. We're going to actually talk in great detail about the 99 plan. When we return from the break, I'm actually going to break down the 999 plan, and I'm going to talk a little bit about each component, as well as talk about the change he proposed with this new 9-0 plan. So when we return, exactly what we're going to do. So stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, of course, I am really, really excited to be sharing with you one of the premier tax plans that are out there today. And, of course, joining me to talk about this plan is going to be my co-host, Jima. Now, Jima, of course, if you know, if you joined the show before, that she is the syndicated columnist of the Ask Jima blog. And, of course, she is the author, editor extraordinaire for the TaylorMade blog, and that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Now, before we open up the phone lines, we're going to talk to Jima about Herman Cain's 999 plan. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, of course, the pleasure is mine. Now, I want to talk about Herman Cain's 999 plan. Now, of course, we're talking about the greatest tax plan out there right now. Now, I want to break down the 999 plan right quick. And so I want to talk a little bit about it, the details, because a lot of people really don't know what's in the 999 plan. I'm going to talk about what his proposal is. Now, of course, there are two phases to the 999 plan. Now, phase one, of course, he says that the current economic crisis calls for bold action to truly stimulate the economy and renew America back to its greatness. The 999 plan gets Washington, D.C. out of the business of picking winners and losers, using the tax code to door out favors and dividing the country with class warfare. Now, there are three parts of this tax. There's the business flat tax, which is the first nine. Now, what this means is gross income less all purchases from other U.S. located businesses, all capital investment, and net exports. And, of course, the second nine is the individual flat tax, right? Gross income less charitable deductions. And then, of course, the third nine is a national sales tax. Now, according to a former Ronald Reagan Treasury official, Gary Robbins, the 999 plan will expand the GDP by $2 trillion, with a T, create 6 million new jobs, and increase business investment by one-third and increase wages by 10%. Now, Jima, how can you argue with that?
Well, first of all, the language that you stated in the first nine, maybe because I don't have a business, but I didn't know what you were talking about. So the reason why I can't argue with you, because I still don't have a full understanding of how is this 999 going to have an impact on my day-to-day life? How much money am I going to have to pay? That's what I need to know. And right now, that's not telling me that. It's talking in theory about what the possibilities are. But I need to know from a realistic standpoint, as a consumer, as an individual, if I make such amount of money, how much of my money am I now paying in taxes as opposed to what I'm paying currently? That's what I need to know. If he can explain that to me, and the problem is that it would be different if everybody in the world was making the same amount, but it's not. So, you know, we're going to be right back where we are right now in terms of, you know, the least of these, which includes myself, paying the lion's share of what's going to be coming out of a 9%. So 9% of 26,000, which they say is the average income, it bears a whole lot more than 9% of somebody that's making $1 million. They're not going to miss their 9% as much as I'm going to miss mine.
Is that a
true statement?
Well, somewhat. And I think what people are missing, and I think it's a fundamental component of the 999 plan, is the fact that right now there are only a small percentage of the people that are actually paying taxes. And so what Herman Cain is potentially proposing is the fact that everybody pays, as opposed to let me give an example. Okay, I'm going to break it down for you. So in the middle, I'm going to say, you know, from that landmark that you put down, that earmark that you put down of 25K and upward to about 100K, and maybe even 125K. So that's $100,000 that pays majority of the taxes and that bear the majority of the tax burden of the United States. Below that, people don't pay taxes, and above that, they don't pay taxes. So what Herman Cain is really suggesting is the fact that, well, let's spread the burden around. And because if you were in the middle of America and you were paying 18-19% in taxes now, you're going to reduce that down to 9%. Now, the corporations will tell you that they're paying 20-30%, but the reality is that they're not paying that in taxes. They are paying somewhere, in some cases, it was reported that GE paid 0% taxes. So the argument that he's making is that, look, people in the bottom are not paying at all. People at the very top are not paying at all. And so the amount of revenue that you can generate if everybody participated would be far more, you know, than it would be if you only had – and you spread the wealth around. And then there are no, you know, quote-unquote loopholes for people to get out of because it's a flat rate, 9%. You pay it, and that's it.
Okay, but obviously, like I stated, a week ago and the week before that, you know, is that because – I'm not as enthusiastic about Herman Cain as you are in terms of researching what his 999 plan really is, because I don't think it's going to fly, so I'm not going to waste my time trying to figure it out. But what I do want to know, what I do want to know is, if it's such a great idea, then why so much pushback? If this 999 plan is going to equal things out across the board, from the least of these to those that have more than enough, then why is there so much pushback about the plan if it's so great?
Well, I would say that any time that you have something bold like this, you're going to always get pushback. Let me give an example.
This is bold. This is bold.
Absolutely it's bold. And it's bold because the current tax structure is in place and people are comfortable with it because there are so many different loopholes. I mean, there are so many different ways to get out of paying taxes that it's just ridiculous. And so the country in a position like it is now, when not a lot of people paying into the tax because they don't have jobs, then you still have the people that should be paying taxes not paying taxes at all.
Right, but if you increase the, if you go back to fix the original problem, see, fixing the tax code is the symptom of what the original problem is. The original problem, the original ailment, is that there are no longer jobs here in America. Those jobs have been shipped overseas. Some of them are not ever coming back, and some of them, if they do come back, they're not going to make a livable wage. So the original issue is how do we get jobs back in America that's paying a livable wage? And then the money that's needed in the federal government will take care of itself because you would have more people working, which means you have more people contributing. But if we just fix one part of it and we don't fix the other part, we'll find ourselves right back here again, don't you think?
Well, somewhat, but I'm going to go back to your original question about, you know, why is it getting so much pushback? Then I'll address the second question about the taxes, right? So the first question is I want to kind of hold it up right next to the president's health care plan that was supposed to be so good for everybody, right? You know, and anytime that you're getting away, getting rid of pre-existing conditions, anytime that you can have your children stay on your income for longer, all those are good things. Those are good provisions and a great plan, right? And so, and President Obama got all kinds of pushback from a lot of different people. So we can't juxtapose just because something good or bad that they're going to get pushback. I think in either case, that whenever you propose something this bold, like Herman Cain is doing, that he should get the pushback. He should get people questioning his plan because that's the only way that you're going to get a good product.
Right. Okay, and I give you that. But on a partisan level, though, the pushback, the majority of the pushback Herman Cain is getting about his wonderful 999 plan isn't coming from the opposing side. It's coming from the side that he's the team that he's supposed to be playing on. That's number one. Number two, I agree with you that it ought to, you know, things, if we want to do something different, we do have to take bold steps. I'm not disputing that at all. I just don't think this is the right bold step because I don't think it fixed the overall problem. But I don't know if we really ever want to fix the overall problem in America when it comes to any of the issues that we have. We tend to want to put a Band-Aid on something, and we tend to want to fix the part that's easy. But the hard work, whether it's the tax code, which a lot of people saying needs to be redone, or gotten rid of or whatever, but nobody wants to put in the work to do that. Same thing with the health care. Nobody wanted to put in the work that it was going to take to get a plan in place that the majority of people that was uninsured would be able to benefit from. So I don't really know if we want to fix any of the problems that we have. We talk about it, but I'm not sure that's what we really want to do.
And to your point, that's exactly why I give Herman Cain so much credit for putting his plan out there. He literally, you know, put his dairy air out there and exposed it to get the conversation started. Because otherwise, we would do exactly.
I'm not
going to
give Herman Cain that much credit, Mr. Cook.
Well, why not?
He put his plan out there to get the conversation started and to get people talking about it. I am not going to give Mr. Herman, get on my train, pull your own self up, don't be mad at me because I'm rich, Cain. That he did that so we could talk about our system. I don't agree with that. He did that to sell some books. He did that to keep his name. If you think about Herman Cain, and the only reason why, you know, I listen to him because I want to know what he's saying, but every single week, Herman Cain appears on somebody's show and says something that is so over the top, so extreme, that he has to stay on TV the rest of that week explaining what he said. And then the next week, he does the exact same thing all over again. I do not think that Herman Cain would be the GOP's nomination. I do not think that. Not because of the color of his skin, but because Herman Cain does not have a plan in place past today.
Well,
I don't think so. The 999 is about as best as you're going to get out of Herman Cain. You don't get much else.
Well, I beg to differ with you. And in fact, I'm going to play a clip from Herman Cain at his site that I go to on a daily basis. Stand by. Let's take a listen to this.
Our tax code is the 21st century version of slavery. The IRS has become the overseer of the American people. the Herman Cain administration, April 15th will no longer be a day to be dreaded. My 999 Economic Growth and Jobs Plan is a major step towards tearing the chains off the backs of the American people.
We have got to supercharge the growth of this economy.
Herman Cain says it's really time for massive tax cuts.
Take the current tax code and replace it with a 9% tax on corporate profits, a personal flat tax of 9%.
The tax code goes away. You don't have to fill out all those straight forms.
And a 9% national sales tax.
We'll all be able to say, free at last.
Now, you got to be excited about that. And so you have to be excited about that, right?
No. Not excited at all.
I mean, we're getting ready to current.
Not excited at all.
Okay. So what do you make about his comment that the current tax code is synonymous with slavery?
You know, here's what I want people to stop doing as it relates to slavery. I want people to stop using it as some antidote. Slavery was not anything that was comical. It was not anything that should be made light of. When we began to use slave knowledge and slave language to make it be like it's just another thing that just happened in America, I'm sick of that. You know, I'm tired of them misusing and misrepresenting how bad slavery was for America. So every time a politician or a layperson wants to use something, they don't talk about any other reference in history and try to make it be less than what it was, like they talk about slavery. You don't hear nobody talking about the Holocaust. You don't hear nobody making reference to any other thing that happened in America like they do slavery. And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. Slavery was nothing to play with. It destroyed lives. It took away so much from a group of people. And yet every time I turn around, somebody want to make some slave reference about something. It's done. It's done.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I'm not okay with him talking about the IRS or whatever he said. That's unacceptable for me.
Okay. All right. It makes sense. I can respect that. But I can say that Herman Cain is the front runner. I can say that he's getting a lot of traction, and I can say that right now I don't see anybody that has an opposing view of the 999 plan. They're always trying to shoot holes in his plan, but I haven't heard anybody else's plan proposed. So I have to pay credit where credit is due.
I'll give you that. You know, I mean, I give him an A for effort. He has at least taken the time to take a look at the situation for what it is and has tried to come up with something. So I would give him an A for effort, yes.
Okay. So since we talked about slavery, well, I want to go ahead and talk a little bit about what Brian Grommel said and his reference that he made to the plantation overseer. So these references seem to creep themselves up among African Americans. Now, these are not Caucasians bringing this reference up. These are African Americans bringing this reference up. So after the break, I'm gonna play a segment. I'm actually gonna play a capture from News One about what Brian Grumble's statement was, and then let me get your comment about that. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises has joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
website, haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boone friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to open up the phone lines here shortly. And we're also going to have a chat room open. Send your comments out there. You can get in contact with me also on Twitter if you have any comments. And on Twitter, that's at TaylorMade101. Of course, you can also tweet Jima. And as you heard Reverend Al said, her handle is Ask Jima. That's at A-S-K-J-E-M-A. And that's on Twitter. You can get in contact with her that way. So before the break, we were talking about the fact that Herman Cain made reference to slavery. And Jima kind of hinted that, you know, this happens too often. Now, so many people always want to make reference to slavery or want to talk about and want to take light of it, using in joking fashions. Politicians use it all too often on the campaign trail. Well, over the past week or so, we had a very respected commentator, journalist, invoke slavery. And this, of course, is Brian Gumbel. And if you haven't heard it, I'm going to play it for our listening audience out there. And I want you to take a listen, and I want to kind of get your feedback, man. Let's take a listen to what Brian had to say.
Finally tonight, if the NBA lockout is going to be resolved anytime soon, it seems likely to be done in spite of David Stern, not because of it. I say that because the NBA's infamously egocentric commissioner seems more hell-bent lately on demeaning the players than resolving his game's labor impasse. How else to explain Stern's rants in recent days? To any and everyone who'd listen, he has alternately knocked union leader Billy Hunter, said the players were getting inaccurate information, and started sounding Chicken Little claims about what games might be lost if players didn't soon see things his way. Stern's version of what's been going on behind closed doors has, of course, been disputed, but his efforts were typical of a commissioner who has always seemed eager to be viewed as some kind of modern plantation overseer, treating NBA men as if they were his boys. It's part of Stern's MO, like his past self-serving edicts on dress code or the questioning of officials. His moves are intended to do little more than show how he's the one keeping the hired hands in their place. Some will, of course, cringe at that characterization, but Stern's disdain for the players is as palpable and pathetic as his motives are transparent.
Now, I find that those comments to be very deliberate. Brian Gumbel, of course, is a brilliant scholar wordsmith. And for him to use those words in that particular context, he meant it. He wasn't reaching He wasn't reaching for commentary or trying to fill airtime. He actually meant those words, and he was very deliberate in his tone, his tenor, and what he said. What do you think about it, Jim? Why was he so deliberate?
Well, we would be kidding ourselves if we said that Brian Gumbel was the first commentator to have those sorts of feelings as it relates to organized sports. So let's just be clear about that, because the majority of the players are people of color, African American. Majority of the owners, GMs, are white. So let's just call that what it is. So yes, I agree. I believe he was deliberate, but it's not as though he is in a vacuum in his thought process. You have players that believe some of the rhetoric that Brian Gumbel had to say. They may not have articulated in such a manner, but when you have Dwayne Wade and several other players, you know, coming out saying you're not going to keep disrespecting me, you know, a part of that, you know, has to do with you're not going to keep talking to me like I'm your child. You're going to talk to me like I'm a man, because that's what I am. And so when you hear that type of language, you know, it's easy to point to and say, well, Commissioner Stern treats them that way because they're young, they're black, and he can. But at the end of the day, we have to remember that Commissioner Stern works for the owners. He don't work for the players. He works for the owners. So it is he is in his element when whatever he does is pleasing to the owners, because that's who he works for. And I think we forget that as the fan, and I think the players forget that because they, you know, he's tried to create this atmosphere, you know, like we all one big happy family, but that now that our backs is up against the wall, the players are kind of like, wait, what's up, Commissioner? You're not even trying to meet us halfway. And so they forget he works for the owners. So he has to ensure that at the end of the day, the owners will be happy or he won't have a job.
That is true. So let me. You made reference to Dwayne Wade. I'm going to read the article that talks a little bit more about that in the Inquisitor. It says that in the most recent attempt at putting an end to the ongoing NBA lockout, players and owners met for nearly 4 hours on Friday to try to extend the collective bargaining agreement. Now, all-stars such as Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Carmelo, Kevin Durant joined the Players Association Executive Committee for the meeting headed up by the commissioner and Players Union Chief Billy Hunter. A person debriefed on the meeting confirmed that Wade took offense to the way Commissioner Stern was addressing the players, talking down to them, and pointing at them like they were little kids. When Stern directed his finger in D-Wade's direction, the Heat guard reporter stood up and screamed, "Don't put your finger at me. I'm not a child." So that's where a lot of this stuff is starting to come to a head. I mean, we see the business transaction of what happens in the NBA, right? We see the fact that dollars change hand, these million-dollar contracts. We see the memorabilia and all the equipment and stuff like that being paid for, and fans and players. We also see the fun part of the sports when, you know, people winning championships and in the playoffs and in the close games. But what we're seeing is this new dimension of the NBA, which seems to me is deeply rooted in some kind of racial, it takes a slightly racial connotation here. What do you think?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, I mean, you have to just look at that as one perspective of it. Now, one does not have to, we all have our beliefs about what we believe about certain people, about cultures, about athletes, about how much money they make, you know, is it too much? But the impasse they're in right now is one that the owners themselves put themselves in. So when you look at the race of it, when the majority of the players are black and the majority of the owners are white, you have to wonder if somewhere in the back of the mind of somebody, of one or two of the owners, if they do have that "I own you" mentality. That's not to say that they all do, But you have to wonder if that ever comes out in an action that someone has perpetrated against someone else. And so, yeah, race will be a factor because of the nature of the business. But, I wouldn't go so far with Brian Gumbel and his total critique of Commissioner Stern. I mean, I think some of the things he did was great in terms of a dress code or some of those things, because we, you know, people in most jobs, you have to show up a certain kind of way. You just can't show up any kind of way. So I don't think that was that bad. I think how it came out was probably worse than what it really ended up being, because I think them coming out dressed a certain way has had an impact on that particular culture, because now we see the sweaters and the vests and the ties and the glasses that they're wearing that we see people wearing in videos or that we see people wearing in fashion magazines. So I think they've had I think the dress style has had, you know, probably a positive impact more than negative, because a lot of them are coming out with clothing lines now. I mean, who would have thought? So, in the totality, I understand what Brian Gumbel was saying because of some of the things Commissioner said in the past, and then listening to what Dwayne Wade had to say in terms of how that exchange went down. But like I said earlier, we cannot continue to trivialize and marginalize slavery and come up with these terms of plantation overseer and the liberal plantation, language that, you know, Pat Buchanan used a couple of weeks ago. We can't continue to marginalize and trivialize the impact of slavery and how it affected so many people by just throwing the language out, you know, kind of haphazardly. So I just wish he had to come up with something else, and then I probably would be 100% behind him.
Okay, so here's what gives me pause. They're in a position where they're fighting for about 50% of the take, right? And it seems to me that the players have for many, many years been fighting this battle, because this is not the first time we've been approaching an NBA lockout, right? In fact, I think the hockey season was canceled, or at least a large part of it, a few years back, and now it's like the NBA is going to probably be reaching that too as well, because of money. So what prevents the players from going out and getting their own teams? I mean, they have the money. You cannot say they're not in a position financially to own a team, especially you're talking about, past players joining up with current players, or, you know, Hall of Famers, or getting some other people involved. I mean, we have the capital. When I say we, I'm talking about the players in that particular industry, have the capital to purchase a team, or for lack of a better term, they can start their own team, for that matter. So why is it that they're, you know, lashing out at the owners and saying, hey, you know, I want this, I want that, I want that, as opposed to just getting their own team?
Well, I think there's two things to that. One is I think I read somewhere this week earlier that a couple of them are talking about forming some sort of quote-unquote league during this process to be able to play some kind of way and be able to give something. They said they're going to do some charity events in each city to be able to give the fans something and still, you know, generate, you know, some money, whatever, for a worthy cause, because they know that they can some kind of way give back. And that might be their springboard to see how it goes, to see if people come out and support them. You know, we say we'll support something, and then when it happens, we don't show up.
Absolutely right.
If I was them, I'd be a little gun-shy, too, to put myself out there and say, you know, the heck with the NBA, we're going to go on and do our own thing. Because we still got to have – somebody still has to be in charge of the process. And so who is going to be in charge, and why, and how do we come to the conclusion that this is the person that's going to be in charge? So, you just can't go out and create a league. In the famous words of the president, you got to have some infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things have got to be in place, and unless they were thinking about this all along, then that means that this date, if they were thinking about this all along, if they were forward thinkers, if they were thinking things out ahead of time as opposed to reacting to something, if they were proactive and they saw at the end of the season, last season, that this was a potential, they would have been laying the groundwork for something new so that in the event that they actually did go into a lockout, they would have been ready to go. You understand what I'm saying? So it wouldn't have been such a reaction. They would have been prepared for how am I going to take care of myself, as opposed to being at the hand and foot of somebody else.
Which means that this creates an opportunity more than anything for the NBA players or the people in that space to do something bold and different. Now, it might not be as good as the 999 plan, but at least it gives them an opportunity to do something bold. Right?
Yes. That's my short answer, yes.
Okay. So I guess then, if the NBA and wanted to take that next step to say, look, we're tired of talking. We're going to now move in the direction of doing our thing. There are a couple of things that will prevent them from doing that, like contracts, right? They can't just go out and – right now the NBA owns them. Isn't that true?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that in this totality, primarily because they're not obligated if they're not in season. They're not playing right now.
So was the contract
I don't know the answer to this, is a question. Was the contract voided when they went on a lockout? Because they're not getting paid.
Right.
So, was the contract, are they really quote-unquote still under contract if they are in a lockout and not getting paid? Because you can't tell me what to do and you ain't paying me.
Right.
I don't have the answer. I mean, I'm guessing that that's the reason why there's no season, because there's no contract, and they can't agree on the terms of a deal. So I don't know how they would be they would have to be beholding to a contract that I'm not getting paid for right now.
Yeah, because that's why it's kind of a weird situation, because I know people that, that signed those deals, like LeBron signed a 5-6 year deal not too long ago with Miami, right? I mean, so, is he going to not get paid? Isn't that a breach of contract if you don't pay him?
Well, that's probably why something in that contract and all of them states about the collective bargaining as long as the collective bargaining agreement is in effect, these are, the guidelines to what, how your contract would be structured. And that's probably also why a lot of them want so much money up front, because hopefully they're thinking about the possibility of not having a full year's worth of a contract and something happening. So LeBron comes out smelling like a rose for his contract he did last year, where he got so much money up front as well, because now he's not getting paid any money.
Right.
So hopefully he was smart and, set some things aside. But
and
you have the multi-million-dollar bribes, it's not that many of them.
Right, exactly.
You know, you got a lot of players just playing for the league minimum, which to us is still a lot, but if you don't have that, if you lose your $250,000 a year job today, if your check stops coming on Tuesday, what are you gonna do?
You can't put that out there that I make $250,000, because people will assume that I do that. If I made that kind of money, I would probably be in jeopardy. If I made that kind of money,
So we hear all the time from the financial experts of, how much we should have in savings and just in case something happens. But on the flip side, that we also hear of all the hard luck stories of all of these athletes have made all this money and then they be broke because they tried to take care and pay for everybody. And so I'm wondering about those athletes that were the league minimum. How are they making it? I mean, I know there's a couple that went and got regular jobs, you know, like a furniture store and a paint store and stuff like that. And so there's a couple of them that I know are working, you know, just regular jobs, like everybody else trying to make it. I know there's some that went back to school, which, you know, education is always important. That's something that no one can take away from you, your knowledge. So I applaud them for that. But, you know, I wonder how many of them will go through a divorce if they don't have a season.
Yeah, not to mention you got Christmas coming up, the holidays coming up. And another man without a job. I mean, you know, and if you're talking about you mentioned the $250K, but it's easier for me to recover from that kind of financial situation than it is from a $250 million contract or a million dollars. I mean, you know, I can't just go out there and make up the difference of a million like I can make up the difference for $250K. I mean, they're both a substantial amount. If I was making one or the other, but for the truth of the matter is, making $1 million, it's hard to make up to close that gap.
Yeah, it is hard. It's hard. It's very hard to close that gap because your whole life is around that money, and your family's life, everybody's life is around your $1 million. And so, even if you make $1 million, you're not bringing home $1 million. Absolutely. So you got to make more than $1 million to bring home $1 million.
Because a lot of they're going to go to taxes.
Here we go. Okay,
so
Herman Cain's 999 plan for your $1 million is a benefit.
Well, it wouldn't be so much going in taxes. So of course the NBA players, if they were in season, would be getting a good benefit from it. But we've moved on from that. I was just kind of reminding people how good that plan would be. But for the most part, if we're saying that. What I hear you saying is that if the season doesn't happen, you believe that there are going to be some divorces, some domestic violence, some alcoholism, some drugs, all of these things.
Oh, yes, for sure. Oh, for sure. And I say that, you know, not in jest, but because when you have allowed yourself to be attached to who you are and you are no longer that person, you're no longer the starting guard for whatever team that is because there is no season. So what brought you all of your fame and glory isn't really working for you right now because you're not playing anywhere. So I can't really continue to just throw all of my applause on you because you're not doing anything. So there would be some issues where, honey, we're not going to be able to do A, B, and C like we had planned because we really need to put that away. Well, she might not be okay with that. She might not understand the need to cut back because you have given her everything she's always wanted and everything she asked you for, you gave it to her. So now you're going to tell her she can't go to the store or no, she can't go shopping. That's going to create some issues. So I hope everyone has a therapist close by to kind of help them navigate these waters because for your younger players, you know, some of them, they just, you know, when you with age comes maturity, hopefully, and wisdom, and you're able to talk your way through some things. I know in my 20s, I wasn't talking my way through anything because I just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
I just leave because I'm like, I can go do this somewhere else. So I wonder, you know, if that would be the case as this thing continues to linger and linger on.
I happen
if people
to agree
will
with
begin
you.
To walk away, yeah.
I happen to agree with you. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So, Jim, we got a couple of more minutes for this segment. Was Brian Gumble, was he right by making a statement, or do you think he was wrong by making a statement? And a follow-up to that would be, is this a good time to be having this conversation now, whether he was right or wrong?
I can't say he was. I don't know. I can't answer about right or wrong. What I can say is that it has definitely created a dialogue once again about race, about how we view athletes, how we take a look at the fact that the majority of the athletes are black, majority of the owners are white, not only white, but white males at that, not, you know, negating from our other, from the few minority-owned teams or my minority interest-owned teams or whatever, with Bob Johnson and Michael Jordan and B and, you know, some other people, and now Will and Jada with the Philadelphia 76ers. So, you know, we are making some strides in that area. But when you take a look at, like I stated earlier, in the totality of his conversation around David Stern and the commissioner he's been, there's been some things that one wonders. Did the commissioner of hockey have to tell the hockey players, or did he tell the hockey players that they had a dress code? Has he ever, when they were on their lockout, did either one of them ever walk out and feel like they were being talked down to in a voice of condescension? One has to wonder, you know, if it's not about race, then what is it about? So, you know, we have to save our, you know, we have to save those things that are truly race-related to real race-related issues. And so we can't make everything be about. But when it is about race, we have to be comfortable enough to call it what it is and deal with it. But we can't make it all good all the time.
Should he apologize?
Should who apologize?
Brian Gumbel.
No.
Do you think they're going to be?
He should not apologize.
You think they're going to be calling for him to apologize or something along those lines?
I don't think. I don't. If so, I would have heard it by now, because the Real Sports usually comes out on HBO. You come Tuesday, and so I haven't heard any. The new episodes come out on Tuesday. So I hadn't heard anything this week about anybody calling for him to apologize. I mean, and the reason for that is because of, see, you know, I don't know if I want to say this like it out, but Brian Gumbel is a respected journalist. So it's not, and so when Brian Gumbel makes a statement like that, you have to say, what was he thinking? Because when he's made statements about things in the past, he was pretty much on target. And Brian Gumbel can be quite controversial and confrontational. He doesn't shy away from what he perceives to be an issue. He will attack it head on. And so maybe, you know, the backslash of it is that he is forcing us to have a conversation about, you know, the disparities in our sports and entertainment. Because you've had everybody from every spectrum this. So he's definitely had us talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Well.
But no, I don't think he should apologize.
Well, okay. So coming up next, we're going to talk about some other potential unemployment issues. We're going to have the troops coming back home here. And I'm going to talk about what President Obama talked about this week. He said that the troops will be home by the end of the year. Hooray, hooray, hooray. We're also going to talk about, is President Obama something like a superhero? All these villains just keep dying while he's in office. Let's talk about that after the break. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gema. And Ask Gema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boone.
need a new website, haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Okay, on tap, President Obama. This president, I got to tell you, he is something else. I think he's something like a superhero. Mainly because first it was Osama bin Laden, then it was al-Awlaki, now Gaddafi. I can't imagine another president being like this in at least my lifetime. Jimmy, what do you say?
Well, what do I say? President has definitely taking care of business, and it just shows you what he can do when he is not held hostage by the ways and the ins and outs of Congress. So, you know, the area in which they thought he was going to be the weakest in terms of foreign policy and how to handle this air quote war on terror, he has been the strongest in. So, you know, he has proven all of the naysayers wrong. He has answered every call and has done so in such a manner that brings dignity back to the office of the presidency in foreign affairs, in my opinion.
And speaking of taking the call, I want to play something for you. I want to rewind the clock back for a minute. I want you to get you to respond to this. Take a listen to this.
And your children are safe and asleep. But there's a phone in the White House, and it's ringing. Something's happening in the world. Your vote will decide who answers that call. Whether it's someone who already knows the world's leaders, knows the military, someone tested and ready to lead in a dangerous world. It's 3 a.m., and your children are safe and asleep. Who do you want answering the phone?
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
So, has he answered the call?
He's more than answered the call. Sometimes he's been ringing the phone himself. He's been so ahead of everybody else. He has answered the call. He has made the call. And yes, on more than one occasion, he has made the call that will have our troops home, ending this decade-long war in a place we should have never entered anyway. And all the lives that were lost because of a bad decision, and we just kept making bad decisions about that occupation. So I'm grateful that he is taking a stance and saying, and he's weighed out all the options, you know, and you have several politicians and Congress members and even members of the Defense Department that disagree with pulling out right now, but he's like, we're done. We've done all we can do over there. We need to come home and do some stuff at home, and I have to applaud him for that.
Yeah, I keep saying I think he's something like a superhero. I mean, you know, I'm being facetious, but at the same time, if you look at his record, I mean, again, you mentioned it, you said it a few seconds ago, when he doesn't have Congress stepping in his way, he really is able to get a lot done when he doesn't have that, you know, that barrier in front of him. So, again, I think he's something like a superhero. So, yeah, I pose a question about, of course, that the familiar 3 a.m. call and the fact that he's been able to answer the call time and time again. So why is it that the Republicans can't collectively give him credit for his great foreign policy?
Because to give him credit means he's doing something right, and they can instill fear in you and make you feel like life is never going to be the same. Oh, woe is me. If they tell you that's a good job. I mean, their whole basis of how they win elections is on fear and false information. That's what they do. And so they cannot, you know, say what a great job he's done on foreign policy because of how bad they said he would be on foreign policy. So then they would have to go back and admit they were wrong about him, and they're not going to do that.
I can tell you what I'm seeing. I've seen the president mature over the last few years. You know, it's almost like going into a situation where, and I've done this too, and when I'm working in corporate America, and you go in, you have these preconceived notions about how you think the world should operate. You know, you have good intentions, you got the right skill set, you have the right experience, you have the right education. I mean, you have everything that's required, but when you get into the actual facility or to the entity, then you find out that things are no matter what you bring to the table, it's just not going to happen for you. So it seems like to me that he's in a similar situation. He's done everything he could possibly do to work together with the Republicans. So he's saying at this point, I understand now in the maturation process, this is not going to happen. So I have to continue to do the things that I know I have complete control over, like, for example, the military. He's uninhibited when it comes to that. Going to the American people, writing the bills, and he's saying, I'm putting these things on, I'm putting these things down, and the American people are seeing that he is fighting for them. And so he's, in my opinion, going around Congress now.
Well, yeah, he's trying. He's really trying. And when you have Congress that, you know, they say that this group that's there now that states that they're there for the people and they're listening to the people, yet, you know, when it's time to do something for the people, it's like they're nowhere to be found. So it's going to be very difficult for me to think that a lot of these new freshmen people in Congress, as well as some of the older people in Congress, are going to be around for re-election in 2012 because they haven't done anything that deserves their seat. And so they need to be moved out of the way. And I just hope we don't have amnesia, you know, come time to vote and we forget how, you know, they stalled everything and how this economy could have been on an upswing a lot faster if Congress was doing half of what it could do. It's not even doing half of what it could do. And so that's what infuriates me the most. They could be doing so much more to work together as our members of Congress that we elected to do it. We didn't just elect the president to do a job.
Right.
We elected everybody in Congress to do a job. And everybody is stuck right now. So they need to get themselves in gear as well.
You know, when I look at the way the media is trying to downplay his foreign policy now. Of course, you know, before it was all about foreign policy, inexperience, things of this nature. Now, when you hear the media speak about his success, they wrap his success in the fact that it may not be enough to win a second term. Every time they talk about that particular instance of Osama bin Laden or Alaki or Gaddafi, they say, yeah, he did a great job, but it may not be enough to win him a second term. By using that language and by saying that, it's trying to shake the conversation around people believing that he's not doing enough for them. When that's not true. Because when you look at the facts, when you look at the fact that he passed the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, which makes it illegal for employers to pay unequal wages to men and women. Who can be against that? You're talking about the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. It provided hundreds of billions of dollars into infrastructure. He saved the American auto industry and its hundreds of thousands of jobs, overturned No Child Left Behind. He undid the GLBT thing with the gays in the military. Now he's filling another campaign promise by bringing our troops home from Iraq. I just don't understand how the media and the Republicans and all of these people that are so against the president, I just can't see the logic in it. Can you help me understand the logic in this situation?
Well, I don't know if I can help you, but I can give you my take on it. You have to remember that the media's job is for ratings. And if you notice, the louder you are about the president and your dislike of him, the more time you're on television. I mean, there's not a lot of people on TV talking about how great the president is. You got a few, you know, commentators out there and a few pundits out there that do get on there and that do speak truth to power. But for the majority of time, we don't talk about him. We talk about the crazy people that always have something negative to say about the president. So it's not as though being a supporter of the president is going to get you a lot of ratings. I mean, even on MSNBC now, if you take a look at them lately, you know, they've although they're supposed to be the liberal answer to Fox, well, on any given day, I can turn on there and find somebody that's just reeling the president. There's times that I can't go on Fox and find anybody supporting the president as much as you have somebody on another channel that's going out against them. So it's money. There's money in ratings and coming out against the president, and to say, you know, that was a good job, and then to say it and mean it. You know, some of them will come out and they said, oh, that's good. But I didn't really think I think they just said it because they felt like they had to. But I don't think they really meant it. They don't wake up in the morning with a goal to be supportive of the president. That's why he has to go back out to the streets and go back to doing what he knows. He's a community organizer. And that's exactly what he's doing right now. He is organizing his community. You can call it his base. You can call it liberals. You can call it whatever you want to. But he is organizing his community to get out there and get ready for a fight. Because it's going to be a fight to get everything done. When you have 39 states rewriting their voting rights laws and their voting ID laws, it is going to be a fight to not only get reelected, for Peter Bay to go out and vote. And if we don't, you know, wake up and take care of what we have to take care of on this side right now before November, we won't even have to worry about November because we won't be able to vote anyway.
I have to agree with you on that. All right. I want to shift now to Iraq, the fact that he's bringing the troops home by the year's end. Now, of course, CNN is reporting that President Obama said after nearly 9 years, America's war in Iraq will be over. The coming months will be a season of homecomings. Our troops in Iraq will definitely be home for the holidays. I can remember when I fought in the first Gulf War and how excited I was when the announcement was made that we were coming home. Because when you do a tour overseas in a combat zone, you kind of get complacent or comfortable in your situation because you're there for an extended period of time. You really don't know when you're coming home. So you try to make the best of the situation. And you don't necessarily forget, but you try not to remember, if that makes sense, or what it feels like to be at home and all this thing, because you don't want to get yourself up too high so you can come back down low because you don't know when you're coming home, right? Because they've been talking about for years about bringing these troops home. But now I can tell you for a fact that those troops on the ground were excited about going and excited about, you know, fighting for that country. But I can tell you they are more excited about coming back home to the stateside. What kind of impact, Jima, do you think this will have on the troops coming home? And then what kind of impact do you think it will have on the society that they come back to?
Well, as all things, as you stated, having, you know, been in combat and knowing what it's like to be away and coming home, I sincerely hope that the Defense Department is readying it itself for the mental health issues that we will have to address, because we have done a bad job of addressing them with the ones that have already come home. I hope they are ramping up that department in terms of dealing with the mental health issues that we know they're going to have, not just from being on the front lines or whatever their role was over there, but you're coming back home, and you're coming home if you were married to a family, to a wife, to some kids, where that wife has been in charge the whole time you've been away, however many tours that's been. She's going to have to recognize she's going to give up some of that. because, that soldier is back home now. So I really hope that on that side of it, that they are really taking a look at ensuring that infrastructure is in place to get people the help that they need right away, not after something happens, not after somebody snaps, not after, somebody, walks in the room and just snaps on everybody in there, but beforehand, because we know it's going to happen. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and I think the president and first lady talked about this when they were out the other day in Virginia, I think they were in Virginia, about the need to ensure that when our veterans come home, that they're coming home to something. How do we, partner with the different businesses that will begin to take a look at the skills that you have coming from that particular military branch and using that in your company? So doing some training with businesses on, what it meant to be a whatever type of specialist and how that skill can be used now. So, and that was one of the things they were talking about trying to implement, I thought, with part of this jobs bill that the Senate voted down. Mm-hmm. So, there has to be, the Republicans in the Senate cannot have it both ways. And so they're going to have to make a decision about what it is they're going to do and how they're going to support their troops. And they just can't talk about supporting our troops on foreign land. We support our troops when they come home domestically. And so what are they going to do to ensure that? And they voted down two things already that would have helped in that situation. So I just hope that, as I stated, that there's some infrastructure put in place to help deal with some of the mental health issues, because we know that's going to be a case that there's some job training done. There's some, things to help them with in terms of how to write their resume. For those jobs and careers that don't equally equate to something that's going on in the world, but that experience might, the title might be different, but what you did is a skill that can be used. How do we get those things to translate? So, that, he's done the first part of it. The second part isn't for him to do. The second part is for us to do, and for people, in the community, and for those that run, small businesses and resume writing, and those that, get those government contracts with the military, when you're doing those, how are you helping them make the transition from active duty or, active war to coming back home and not coming home and staying for a while? You've been home, but you didn't stay for a while. Now you're coming home, and you're not getting ready for your next tour.
Right.
What is that going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, some of that kind of planning is happening.
Okay, let's go to our phone lines right now. We're going to go to last 4-4-2-3-5. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and you have a comment or a question.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, hi. My name is Monica. And, yeah, I actually do have a comment in regards to what your co-host, I believe, or either caller was talking about in regards to the military coming back home and really kind of jumping right into this unemployment crisis that we have going on in this country. It's sad that we can't, as Americans, believe in the concept of if people want to work, they should be able to. Discrimination, I will also say, against the military is just like discrimination against people who are unemployed, that's non-military, like for age discrimination, even race discrimination, and that's portraying our unemployment crisis having this country, and it's sad. And I would say a sad state on America that we can't look inside of ourselves in order to try and solve this unemployment crisis.
Monica, that's a great point. I want to ask you though.
Mm-hmm.
Since 2000, right? Most of the jobs we've had in the United States were more service oriented, and especially had the technology sector really grew, right? And that created a lot of jobs, even as on the peripheral. And when those jobs were shifted overseas because of lower wages, higher education, in a lot of cases, more equipped to handle those type of jobs, Where do you think the new jobs can come from now, though? I mean, because if those jobs are gone.
Yeah, I'm being honest. It's going to have to come from localities, basically banding together in order to create local sustainability movements. I don't think that we can depend on corporations, for the most part, to be the, I guess you could say, fillers of where it is that we get our jobs from. We're going to have to support entrepreneurialism among local business owners, potential local business owners, to help really honestly solve this employment crisis that we have in this country. I guess looking at the facts and figures that we saw the past, you know, I want to say at least 5 years, it definitely says for sure that corporations have been holding on to money and shipping jobs overseas instead of actually using that money in order to create jobs that create revenue for people to spend. So then guess what happens to the corporations? They actually make more money. But instead of doing that, because it's more costly, I guess you could say, in their opinion, to do business in the country that you're actually, you know, founded in, instead of doing business overseas somewhere, they're playing a game. And it's a game with the American public.
Absolutely they are. Jimmy, what do you think about that? The fact that When we look at the grand scheme of things, Monica had a great point, because on the books of the banks, of the corporations, of the companies, they have millions of dollars, and they have the opportunity to make more products and goods. They have that. They have the capacity and the financial means to do that, but they're not. What is going on here, Jim?
Well, what's going on is that, you know, the ultimate goal is that they want to keep as much money to themselves as they possibly can. And instead of reinvesting that money, because, and I think Monica may have either said this or alluded, when you reinvest in the community, you can about guarantee that the community is going to spend that money right back, and you're going to get it right back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so for them, you know, for them to say that, you know, they're holding on to it because they're not sure about the markets, and they have a direct impact on the markets. So if you want the markets to sustain themselves, hire some people, invest in the community, give people some time with these foreclosures, stop the foreclosures. How about that? How about you go back in and you renegotiate all of those bad loans that you know are bad loans, and everybody that's in foreclosure didn't get a bad loan.
Right.
They just got some hard times. And so we, you know, and we can't lump everybody in the same category. And so there has to be, but they have got to want to do it. And right now there's no sense of urgency. No one is forcing their hand. And, you know, because we, whatever goods and services they provide, we still have to go out and buy. Your two biggest bills, I guarantee you, in your house is gas for your car and food. Guarantee it.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two things we cannot not have, because if we got a job, we got to get there some kind of way. We got a family, we got to eat. So they keep hiking stuff up in that grocery store till I'm at a point where I'm just like, I just need to go buy a piece of land and start a garden, because this is unbelievable to me.
And what now?
The higher ice is just daily stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do you think then that the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street movement will have an impact, and that will preempt or change the behavior of these companies, corporations? Monica, what do you think?
You know, I'm be honest. I'm be completely honest, because I'm a blogger, and I also, you know, host a show here on Blog Talk Radio. But
awesome.
I have been to various Occupy. I live in Michigan, so various Occupy Michigan rallies. And, I mean, I support the movement. I think the movement is great. But they also need to realize that, unfortunately, at this point in time, the system is the way it is. But what you have to do in order to change the system is put into people places that think like you, and try and use the movement in order to get local elected officials, state elected officials, federally elected officials that know the plight of the 99% and put them into those locally elected offices. I mean, when you're looking at it just statistic-wise, it's more of the 99%ers than it is the 1%. So if these people are rallying around, you know, others, I'm not saying candidates that's currently in office. I'm saying maybe these can be new candidates that's best, you know, looked at as leaders inside of these movements variously across the country, then you're actually making some change. Because until that point, and that's not going to be taking, you know, obviously bribes and short deals from corporations, then you're making some change. And then maybe you can see the change that you want to see. The reason why President Obama can't do a lot of things that he wants to do, because unfortunately he's beholden to individuals in Congress that are being paid by corporations in order to mandate policies that favor them. I mean, seriously. And so they vote that way based on what the corporations and people and entities have paid them.
You know, and that's an interesting point. And the reason why I say that is because if you remember when President Obama was on the stump during his election campaign, he talked about not taking money from lobbyists and not taking money from special interests. And so, in my opinion, I believe that the reason why these people are holding on to these dollars and the reason why the Republicans are so dead set against them is because they are accepting these dollars. And so if the president is solely dependent upon the American people supplying his campaign, in which a million people was reported the other day to contribute to his campaign, he's
right.
really for the people, and he's not being strong-armed by these businesses to say, hey, we're greasing your palms, so you have to
right.
do this for us. And so he really has the freedom to move and to say and to do as he pleases. And of course, he's making calculated decisions, making sure he's doing the right thing. But at the most part, it doesn't seem like he's so tied to big business as people would say.
No, I mean, I just want to interject this real quick. I have read a story, and it was over on Huffington Post, about President Obama actually, you know, people write to him in regards to telling him various things, people around the country, that he, not only does he read those letters, he also has wrote checks for personal account to some of the, I guess you could say, most struggling individuals here in this nation.
Yes.
What other president I know of have done that?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. We were just talking about that, right, Jima?
Yes, we were, and we were just saying how that should be an encouragement and something to get somebody else motivated to do something. Because like you said, I've never known another president to take the time, A, to not only read the letter, but be compassionate enough to want to do something about that plight right then. It's just like, you know, when you're dealing with people and you go to church and somebody is down and out and they're hungry and you tell them you're going to pray for them. No, you need to go get them something to eat. So, you know, it's good, I'm going to pray for you, but I need to feed you too so that you can eat right now. And so not only
right.
is he looking at the letter and he's showing compassion, but he didn't tell somebody else to go write a check. He went and wrote a check. That speaks
right.
volumes to the type of man that he is. That's a man
yeah.
for you. And that's the problem that that Congress has with President Barack Obama. He is a man. And you cannot stand in the presence of a man and think you can treat him any kind of way, and he's going to stand there. Because he's going to show you that he's a man. And that's the problem they have with him.
Something like a superhero, as I suggested early on. I mean, he's doing so much, and it's just unreal. And to continue to hear people talk so negatively about him and the things that he's done so much for the average, everyday people, it's just disheartening to me.
It is.
Go ahead, Monica.
I mean, it is, especially when you look at the fact that, you know, he can only do so much. He is not the dictator. What President Obama is there are three branches of government. It's the executive branch, the legislative
right.
branch, and also the judicial branch.
Mm-hmm.
He is the executive branch. Only thing
right.
he can do is make recommendations, and then
mm-hmm.
Congress has to pass them. People
right.
forget that all the time.
Absolutely. So I want to continue to talk about his bringing the troops home, the fact that Jimmy, you mentioned earlier that we're going to have to address the economic issues that we just talked about. We're going to also have to address the mental issues, which you mentioned. But I want to talk a little bit more about when it comes to their needs, the fact that it's not mentioned that often about the alcohol and drug abuse and the spousal abuse that happens when you have a deployment of this magnitude coming back in a short period of time. I recall when I was in the military in the first Gulf War, when we came back to the installation, there was this kind of Jody concept, right? I mean, you know, and it just happens after being deployed for a extended period of time. The fact that, you know, wives go out, they may meet somebody, and they come home, and the house is just in uproar. And the fact that, you know, the soldiers, you know, they go into on a suicidal rage, or they may go into an alcohol and drug abuse, or they may have a lot of spousal abuses. So are we addressing Jimmy, you talked about the mental health issues. Are we addressing these issues right now? Are we prepared to handle these issues right now?
I don't think that we are. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, maybe a year or so ago, I read somewhere that was one of the things that the Department of Defense was concerned about, was that it was not going to have enough therapists available to help deal with some of the crises that they knew would eventually come up once we began to draw down in Iraq and begin to come home. So I don't know if they've ever rectified that situation, what kind of recruiting they've done to address it. But I do, when I say mental health, I encompass all of that in mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that will alter your state of consciousness is a part of that. Anything that is going to cause you to do harm to yourself or harm to others is a concern, simply because you cannot be gone away from home that long and not need somebody else to help you navigate those waters. There has to be. I mean, and I would hope that on post and where these families are coming back to, that there would already be some prep work, you know, being done with the wife that's home, getting her ready for the return. Because the honeymoon phase of being home is only going to last for so long, and then we're going to have to realize that we don't really know each other anymore, and mm-hmm. we've got to talk about some things that we've never talked about, and you can't just make all the decisions anymore because I'm home now. So, you know, hopefully there's some pre-work going on the front end that's happening with the wife or the husband, because sometimes it's the husband that stays back. But, you know, That's happening before that spouse gets there, because we do know that there will be issues. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Right. So in this last segment, I want to talk a little bit more about the economy and the impact bringing the troops home will have. And first, I want to say that I mentioned early on about President Obama taking the opportunity to kind of bypass Congress, right? I mean, he's going to the American people with the jobs bill. He's you know, killing all of the dictators with flying around the country with his superhero cape on, doing those things. And it seems to me that he's made the decision that if Congress is not going to inject money into or authorize him to inject money into the economy through passing this bill, then the next potential opportunity that he will have to do that is bring the troops on, right? Because remember, by having the troops over there is not just dollars in terms of bullets and MREs or meal ready to eat or in the water that they buy over there, but it's also the money that they spend on leasing the land, purchasing the buildings, buying equipment, the local economy they have to purchase because of the food that they buy around there. So there's a lot of money that you spend on war and the intangible things that surround and occupying a nation, that now you get that money back, right? And then when you bring the troops home, they spend that money in a local way. So it can create a huge boost to the economy by bringing those troops home. So I think, again, he's taking this opportunity, to bypass Congress, because obviously he can't get anything done with this Congress, so he's using the vehicles that he has available to him to get things moving again. And, of course, our economic policy always talks about when you bring your troops home, it's an automatic injection to the economy that receives them back. So, Jimmy, is this a good opportunity for us to now see more dollars generated within our economy because of bringing the troops home?
I would hope so. I mean, I would hope so, and I would hope that we, you know, at the end of the day, though, Patrick, we've got to just take care of people when they come home, and we do not have a good track record of that in America, of taking care of our veterans. We do not have a good track record of that, And so, you know, let's hope that this administration helps right that wrong, because there are way too many veterans that are homeless and way too many veterans that are not being taken care of. And we have so many areas. I mean, we have military bases that we've closed, and the buildings are still there. We have prisons that have been built and different places that have been built that we're not using. And so for anybody to be homeless in America is a shame. And it's a double shame to be homeless and you're a veteran. So I hope that we do better this time around. I hope we do better.
Monica, you think this is a good economic policy by bringing the troops home?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. But this is, I guess, I share some of your other co-hosts or guests' concern, is that this is the problem that we have is with our Congress. They also looked at trying to close or take away funding from VA hospitals, veterans hospitals, that are, you know, available for troops to use for some of that mental health counseling and things that they need when they come home if they're having those issues. How is it that we can, as a society, say that we can send you to war, but yet and still we can't provide you the services that you need when you come home?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's President Obama's fault. I mean, this is something that he supported. He even supported, you know, like you had mentioned earlier, in his jobs bill, trying to do something in regards to helping troops when they get back home try and find employment. I do think, and I believe, that it's going to put the goals in Congress that continuously try to cohort any efforts that President Obama makes on notice. Now what you going to do? Because we're going to see, 9,000, 10,000 people coming home. Some of them are going to, you know, de-enlist, and some of them are going to stay in the military. But for the ones that de-enlist and decide to go back into civilian life, what we're going to do, we're just going to say, oh, well, thank you for your service, but in the same aspect, we're not going to help you provide a job. So Congress, I think it's a good strategic move also for President Obama, because he's going to be able to look in that election year and come out to the American people and say, hey, there's no excuse why we have all these veterans looking for employment, looking for opportunities, looking for, you know, help with our VA program, and we got this lame-duck Congress that's sitting up here trying to, you know, cut instead of help to these folks. And so that will hopefully invigorate also employment opportunities, not only for veterans and you know, care for veterans, but also more care for just, you know, normal American civilians.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think that when you look at the grand scheme of things, that I think we all agree that the Congress is the problem. What I don't understand is, though, is that why is it that people are not knocking down their doors? I mean, Congress getting a pass. When you look at the president and the things that, when it came to the health care, when it came to the health care bill, when it came to a lot of things that he did, you know, the Tea Party was so quick to blame President Obama, right? Like you said, there are three branches of government, and he was on all three branches, right? He was responsible for them all, and everybody pointed the finger at him. But it's very obvious that the Congress is not doing their job. I mean, it would be different if they were doing something, as opposed to not doing something that Obama wanted, but they're not doing anything, right? And so I don't understand why the people are not knocking down their walls.
Well, there's two reasons for that. I mean, I can't remember who did the poll. It may have been CNN or somebody, I don't know. But anyway, there was a study or a poll that, and people asked who was the Speaker of the House. What's that person's name? You know, what's the
Bonner.
Right. I know the name, but I'm saying in this study, average Americans don't know this. So who are they going to go and say something to? They don't know who's running Congress, but they know President Obama. So that's why all of the anger and all of the issues is going toward him, because he's the one that they know. But when you ask them about the Speaker of the House or the Speaker, you know, who's running the Senate or all these other things, or even who their own representatives are, they don't know. So they're not going to be able to put any pressure on somebody they don't know. But the Tea Party did a great job in branding all the issues being about the president.
Yes,
for
they
sure.
did. Absolutely.
So there has to be a counter to that. You know, how do we counter that? How do we ensure that people get the right information? Because they haven't gotten it in a long time.
Well,
people have not gotten the right information in a long time.
Well, outside of the president sending his mailing campaign, because in his every mail that I get from him, he always talk about, you know, coming doing this and coming doing that. He's very specific about who the right people to contact. But I would say, yeah, that's good, but what is wrong with our Democratic Party and our Congressional Black mm-hmm. Caucus? I mean, they're supposed to be doing something. They're just as bad as the Republicans are. They're blocking bills. They're, you know, they're standing up against him. Isn't it incumbent upon them to do something as well?
For
sure.
I can interject.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No,
go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I think they're the Congressional Black Congress, and I'm not going to say every member of the crew of 30, I think it's 39, 38. I'm not going to say every member, but most of them are trying to do something. I know I attended a Congressional Black Caucus for the CDC Jobs Initiative that they had here in the Detroit area at Wayne County Community College. And I can tell you, it was those people in the room was not basically sitting there talking about, oh, how great of a job that you guys have done. They got some pretty heated conversations in regards to, you know, jobs and the economy and people's financial state and foreclosures. And we also have to look at, and I guess this is where I come and kind of blame the American public, and not all of them, but the ones that do not make themselves informed. You have to make yourself informed of who you're voting for. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they have a D or an R behind their name doesn't necessarily mean that you should give them their vote. You should look at their policies that they're trying to instill and stand behind. And if those policies don't align with your economic policies, you know what? Maybe vote for someone else or, you know, write it yourself. When I hear that President Obama is the blame of all things that are going wrong in this economy, I just shudder at the thought of why it is that people believe that when we have members in the House of Representatives, members in the Senate. We have 100 people in the Senate, 99 people in the Senate, 435 in the House of Representatives, and there's one President Obama. Come on.
Right.
Let's just look at the numbers. Look at the numbers. So the numbers themselves tell you that he can't be the blame for all this. And, you know, you have to look at where your legislator that you have elected to your district and your Senate in your state have voted. And if they haven't voted in the right way, then you need to make sure on the next election that you tell them, you know, here's your bag, but you can go.
All politics is local. That's right. Jimmy, you had a comment?
No, she covered it. I'm fine.
Well, good. Okay. So we talked – that's the Congressional Black Caucus. What about the Democratic Party, though? Those people, to me, I don't see them doing enough. I don't see them out on the stump for the president or talking about – am I missing something? Jim, what do you
think? No, and I don't necessarily know if they need to be out on the stump for the president. They need to be out on the stump trying to get some bills passed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that, and then I've said this from the beginning, and to go back to the CBC, every time a Republican comes out with a plan or comes out with some sort of statement, there needs to be a counter statement from another elected official, whether that's the CBC or the Progressive Caucus or, you know, the DNC chairperson. I don't care who it is, but we continue to let them get on TV, make these comments, make these statements, and we do not have a counter. That's what irritates me the most about the Democratic Party. We do not stand up. We do not have a solid enough backbone. There is no way that they can continue to come out with these plans, whether it's Ryan's plan or whoever that came out, Eric Cantor, that they make these asinine statements, and then there's not an elected official that you know. See, here's the thing. It should be one of them Democrats that you know. It should, because Maxine Waters has a big voice. It should be a Maxine Waters out there talking. It should be somebody's voice who is going to be recognized to stand up and say, that's not so. Or here is our plan. But for the time that they have been there, They have not come out with their own plan. They just recently did. But that was after the president did his plan. When Paul Ryan came out with his daggone plan, there should have been a counter plan from the Progressive Caucus or from the CBC or from whoever that was Democrat. But we didn't do that. They didn't do that. They just kind of let that thing fester. And then that had a problem that bled over into the debt ceiling. That bled over into the budget. All of that. And it didn't have anything to do with that.
Yeah,
so
well,
every time a Republican is on television and they make some statement, an elected official, let me clarify what I'm trying to say. Every time that an elected official of Congress gets on TV and makes some sort of statement that's a Republican, there should be a Democratic counter. That person should get the same kind of press release that person got. Eric Cantor can call a press conference and say whatever he want to say. Well, then, if that's the case, then Minority Whip Clyburn, I need to see you on TV. Nancy Pelosi, I need to see you on TV as a counter to the nonsense.
Well,
about supporting President Obama. That's about doing your daggone job.
Yeah, I'm glad you clarified that, because you said an elected official, because, of course, I was going to talk about Herman Cain's 999 plan, which I think is brilliant. I mean, it's absolutely amazing how this average guy can come up, and now he's a front runner of the GOP, and how this great, remarkable, outstanding plan, and really don't have a whole lot of opposition to it. Monica, have you heard Herman Cain's 999 plan? Aren't you excited about it?
It is definitely something. I'll put it like that. I have a problem. I can go on and on. I won't. But I'll tell you this much, okay? The plan is not going to work. He wouldn't get it passed in any Congress. The reason why is because you're looking at the fact that states that do have an income tax, which is most states, state income tax, which is most states, it's up maybe, what, 3-4, would be paying anywhere from 12 to 15, in some cases 18. If you're looking at Illinois, they have an 8.9% sales tax. Mm-hmm. On top of 9% that he wants to do inside of a federal tax on any new purchase that they decide to do. Well, that's really not going to invigorate the economy in no aspect. I also noticed that he did, kind of clarify some things. He said that federal tax would not apply for, people with certain incomes underneath our, under the federal poverty line.
Right.
But, you would think that he would have thought about that at first because, no offense, but again, if a person is making, I'm just going to put it out there, $20,000 a year, maybe want to go out and buy, a very affordable new car, right? New car.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize they're getting hit with a 15% sales tax when they do it. Not so much. So, I applaud him for coming up with the effort. They said that he may have got it off a Sims game. I don't know. But, it just is not.
But he did tweak the plan, Jimmy. He said now the plan is not 999, it's 909. And we talked about it earlier in the show. I mean, again, you can't beat that. When you're already paying 7%, 8%, 10%, and then you get down from 7 to 0, isn't that better?
I'm with Monica. I'm not entertaining Herman Cain's plan because it's not gonna fly. No one is gonna vote for it. So there's no need for us to continue to belabor that because not only do you have people of the opposing side that disagree, but you have those in his own party that knows it's not going to work. And as simple as we want to make our tax code be, it cannot be simple. It's just not going to be simple. And so because we have too many various degrees of income and businesses that do various things, and so there has to be something that, which is why it's created like it is now, that we can all, quote, unquote, live with, but that we also feel is fair across the board. What we're saying now is that what we have is not fair. If we go back to the tax rates of what they said was under Clinton, then that was a lot more fair. That's all we're trying to get back to. We're just trying to get back to fair. And right now we're not at fair. And I don't know if 999, 909, and eventually it'll probably be 919, if that's going to work. I don't know.
All right. Well, that's our show for today. Monica, I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your show, when it comes on. I mean, we would love to come out and support your show.
Oh, thank you. Sure. Thank you for offering me that opportunity. We do Reach Out Job Search Radio. It's with myself and also an established young lady called Autumn S. And we do that show on Saturdays and Sundays from 11 to 1 here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We cover Michigan politics, national politics, and also local politics here in the Michigan area. And just to let you know and your listeners know if it's okay, we're going to be having a, especially since you were talking about jobs, we're going to be having a series starting on November 6th, and that series is going to carry on for the first 4 months of until February, first Sunday of the month. And that series is going to be featuring Caitlin Simpson of Regal Resume, talking about basically ways that people can find employment. And the good thing about that is that questions that are asked to her, she's going to pick out the best question out of those questions and give one of those listeners or question people that, submit the questions an opportunity to run a total resume makeover and also a one-on-one job search counseling session with her. She's also a professional resume expert and writer.
Wow, that's awesome. So, again, tell us the date and time so people, the listening audience and out there, can get to that show and the time that you're going to be on.
Okay, again, Caitlin starts on November 6th, so that's the first Sunday in November, and that's at 11 o'clock. And so, yeah, definitely if you can tune in to Reach Out Job Search Radio here, we would love to have you to participate inside of that series. That's the first series, and then you'll find out about the rest of them from there. So definitely make sure that you show up and participate, and hopefully we can get as many people working as possible.
That is awesome. We really enjoyed you. Thanks so much for showing up and supporting the show. Jimmy, any final comments?
Yes. My final comment has to do with we're in a serious situation right now as it relates to our children, and I just hope as we, you know, there's so many, this gun violence is just out of control right now, and I know as the economy gets worse, so does the, you know, people want to say the crime rate's not going up. Well, I want to know where they're living. Because in the area I lived in, you know, just recently, you know, we had a mother take her life and her child's life because she didn't want to give her child over to the ex-husband. So we are living in some serious times, and people will do are doing all sorts of things to one another and to themselves. And so I just hope that as we are taking a look around at what's happening, that we remember that some of our children are just being victims for no real reason, and they have no stake in anything that's happening, and yet they're being victimized by so many things happening in their environment. So let's do a better job of looking after the children in our communities. If I could challenge us to do something outside of ourselves this week, let's do a better job of looking after those children in our community.
You know, Joe Biden mentioned something about the crime rate in a speech that he made the other day, and the fact that if they didn't pass a job bill, that, you know, it could potentially cause more rapes to go up and things of that nature. And so, then you couple that with the fact that the troops are going to be coming home. You're going to be injecting a lot more testosterone inside our economy. So if you combine all those things, you're right. It could really present to be a really bad situation if we don't be vigilant out there. So I really appreciate that comment. All right, well, that's our show. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. I'd like to thank my co-host Jima and, of course, Monica. Make sure to go out there and check our show out the first Sunday. That's November the 6th at 11 o'clock. Now, remember, Current Events with Patrick Cook airs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Now, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce. Thank you.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Gema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gema. And Ask Gema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Point.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.